All right, we're going to be doing the ninth mizmor. In this particular case, I want to pay attention a little bit to the ktovet, to the part that's written on top, namely, Lamnatseach almut laben mizmor le David. Without going too deep into the grammar of it, we have a great deal of dispute and about who is the ben. Who is the son here that we're referring to? And are we talking about al-mut, which would mean on the death of the son? If it's on the death of the son, it should be written al-mut ha-ben, not la-ben. Rashi presents a series of suggestions which he then rejects. One of them is that it is la-ben, for the son, and that it's a reference to the death of Avshalom. Now, as I told you, he says it would not have been the case, because then it would have written Haben, the son. There are some say that this is about Naval HaKarmeli, the husband of Avigail, and that it is written backwards, Naval, Lavan. Says Rashi, he has difficulty accepting this, not only because it's not written straightforward, but because the contents of the mizmor simply doesn't fit. He may have been a miser who did not want to help David, but he certainly was not an evildoer and does not deserve what follows thereafter. So it just doesn't make sense in that regard. Therefore, he presents a completely different position, and that is that according to the Misora, you write the word almut with a dash between them, you see, making it into one word. If that's the case, it's alamot, and the shoresh is alem or alma. An alem or alma is a lad or a lass, and therefore refers to the youth. And possibility that the word laben is not at all the son or for the son, but comes from the word lavan, meaning to whiten, and it is a verb. Alamot laben means to whiten the youth. The youth of Israel, to cleanse it, if you like. He then continues and quotes Menachem and Donash. Menachem and Donash are two of the great grammarians and the earliest forms of commentary that we have. They're not published in regular forms. We know about them because they are the quotations of Ibn Ezra or of Rashi. Now, I want to make it clear to you that Rashi and Ibn Ezra don't know about each other's existence. But the two of them know about Menachem ben Saruk and Donash Halevi about 100, 150 years prior to their lives. And they would have been about the era of Rabbeinu Saadia HaGaon. And there they also presented the following opinion. Number one, the word alamot is not youth, but it is one of the instruments. And so therefore, it is a mizmor, as you would say, a concerto for the piano, a concerto for the violin. It's a concerto for some sort of musical instrument that is called alamot. And he also suggests that the word lavan, laben, means to whiten. Donash is the one that takes the position that there is a man named Laben. And though we have no record of him in the Tanakh, he was an unknown enemy of the Jews, somebody that David in one of his battles fought, and that he wrote this as, if you like, a vindication, a song of triumph, when he heard that this man, Laben, was killed and that he died. as one would say, good riddance to bad
rubbish.
Whatever. Exactly right. I want to quote to you Radak, and Radak goes through all of this. Rabbi Dona Shalevi, Ibn Ezra, all of them said that this is about one of the enemies of David, who was a prince of the Goyim, who oppressed the Jews, and his name was Laban. But Radak takes the position that yes, it's an enemy. It is Goliath. Goliath. This is about him. Because there will be reference here that what he has planned to use as an instrument of destruction against the Jews ended up coming right back to him. You will remember that David cut off his head with Goliath's sword. So he knocked him down with a stone, not being armed at the time, but later on used that very same sword that he had on him to cut off his head. So it's in a sense of a proper comeuppance. There's no question that this is being written. It is actually written in celebration, if you like, of a downfall of an enemy, while recognizing that there's still many of them out there, and praying for that as well. So let's look at this and see what happens in the process, okay? Ode Hashem b'chol libi. Asapra kol nifleotecha. This is celebratory praise. I will thank God with all of my heart. I will tell all of your wonders. Esmecha ve'al tzabach. I will rejoice. I will celebrate alatz with you. Azamra shimcha elyon. I will sing to your name, which is overriding, higher than all of our enemies, stronger than all of them. Rashi notes that all of this is written in the future tense. I will do this, and therefore believes that the song was not merely about something that had happened, but is presented as hope for something that will happen again in the future, when Amalek is destroyed, when the rest of our enemies are vanquished, it will then be, and he says that this will be written against regarding the ultimate Geula, he says, which will be stronger than all of the other Geulas put together. Ibn Ezra says, Bechol libi, with all of my heart, which means I will thank you even not in public. In my heart, in other words, my real intention to speak of it, I will tell of your wonders, that will be in public. Malbim, quoting Chovot HaLevavot, written by Rabbeinu Bechaye Ibn Pekuda, that it is not unusual for a person to say thank you, but not with all of his heart. Why is it not completely sincere? Because the thank you is actually a request for more. It's another way of, if you like, paying back, expecting a continuation. Therefore, according to the Malbim, I thank you with all of my heart, meaning with no expectations of anything that may come in the future. And I will tell of all of your wonders, why even those that look like they were natural. Even those that look like they may have been the result of an adept army. Even those that look like maybe it looks like by my bravery. I recognize that these are all wonders that could have gone the other way. And I will rejoice, celebrate, Becha, says the Malbim. I will rejoice in you and not just in the good that it was done for me. Because he views the wonders that occur to us as a way of publicizing to the whole world that there's a hidden hand of God that leads it. And it is the way, the purpose of his song is to make it known that it's the Ribbono Shel Olam who's making all of this happen. When will I do all of this? You'll notice this is not written in past tense. All of this is written
in the future
tense. Beshuv oivai achor. When will I do this? When my enemies turn back. When they retreat. Yekashlu veyovdu mipanecha. When they stumble and they are erased in front of you. In other words, because God appears, if you like, he will wipe them out. So there's stages. A, retreat. Next thing you know is this stumbling. And finally, this eradication. When they do this in front of you, for those who believe that this is about Amalek, this is, of course, a request that God erase evil from the world, okay? And not merely one set of enemies, but the whole batch, those that are avowed to destroy us throughout the ages. Radak, of course, insists that this is about Goliath. And why? He tries to prove it from the book of Shmuel, in the 17th chapter, in the first book of Shmuel, that after the fall of Goliath, when the Plishtim saw that their hero, Goliath, was killed, they picked up and fled. But you and I know that they fled only to come back another day. So a retreat is not a good enough, because retreat can also mean regrouping. You can go back and then pull again, get your acts together again, and come again. That's why he not only wants a retreat, he wants them then to stumble and ultimately to be eradicated. Ibn Ezra tells us that whoever this man Laban was, when he fell, it was the beginning of the downfall of this entire empire. It was, if you like, the beginning of the end. And we've seen things of this kind, right? Where you have a major leader falling. Once he's dead, it's the beginning of the end of that era. Ki asita mishpati vedini yashavta lekise shofet tzedek. Torashi, mishpati, vedini are simply synonymous. He doesn't try to differentiate between them. But there is something incredible here. He says that when they retreat, when they fall, it will be because God had sat in judgment of whom? Not them, but us. Which means that their downfall becomes a vindication of us. Had we not been worthy, they would not have fallen. Yashavta lakise, which means you sat on the throne. He's describing God as a judge. Shofet tzedek. And envisioning God near not as a man of war, but as a man who brings nations as well as individuals to justice. They're finally, if you like, a vindication of us. And as a result, what did you do? Garta goyim. Ibadeta rasha. Shmam machita le'olam va'ed. Certainly can't be Goliath. Can't be. This was only one battle amongst others. And you can therefore see why Rashi would insist that this is merely using a victory, one victory, and projecting it towards the future, saying, God, that was just one battle. We still need to win the war. And that war is asking God, I will thank you. I will sing your praises if and when you will do what? And now it's in past tense. Ga'arta goyim. Now, ga'ara typically means a rebuke, a scolding. But Radak tells us that when there is no bet in ge'ara, be-ge'ara, just ga'arta, it doesn't mean just to scold somebody, it means to actually destroy them. And therefore, who did he destroy? Says Malbim as follows. He says, first, you destroyed the goyim. Those are the allies of those who would destroy us. I want you to think about this, by the way, in terms of our history. Then ibadata rasha, you wiped out that one roshe. Okay? I want you to think about this. Shmam machita, then you erase their name, and you will do so le'olam va'ed. The concept of erasing their name is not found for anybody except for Amalek. Amalek. And you will remember that the Ribbono Shel Olam had sworn, Yad al Keska. There is a hand on the throne of God, but it's written there, Kes, without an Aleph, and Ka, Yud He, not the full name of Hashem. Turns out that the throne is not complete, nor is his name complete until Amalek is utterly and completely destroyed. Therefore, he is envisioning, according to Rashi, the ultimate battle at the end of time, you understand? When the Ribbono Shel Olam will be sitting on a kiseh, and his name will be complete. He will be judging us compared to them, those who would want to destroy us, and wipe them out. Now, I want you to think about the fact that Malbim tells us that the stages are as follows. The first stage is the destruction of the allies, and the allies are the goyim that are holding up the rasha that's at the head of it. So what you've got is, you've got a loss of their armies, a loss of their friends. They are gradually falling apart. They have no support. Until we finally can destroy the man on top. When we've got that down, now comes the next stage. And that is to erase their name completely. So that it is almost, if you like, as if it had never happened. Because to have their name still there implies that there is still, if you like, the seeds of that evil still around. Mm-hmm. So you do have neo-Nazis still around. Mm-hmm. It's still there. That same old seeds are still there. It has not yet happened. Ha'oyev tamu haravot lanetzach ve'arim natashta avad zichram hema. Ha'oyev, let me speak to my enemy. Tamu charavot lanetzach. The ruins, chuvot. Charavot is not necessarily the swords, though there are some who say it's the swords. Mm-hmm. We've broken the swords. You'll remember Yeshayahu's famous vision that they would break the swords and turn them into plowshares. You recall that, right? So the swords are going to be destroyed, wiped out. And therefore the weapons of hatred, along with chuvot. So there's a double play here. A chuva is the ruins. In the process of war, you've got Dresden in ruins, you've got Hiroshima and Nagasaki in ruins. Those places will not be rebuilt. They will be wiped off the face of the earth. And then repeating the same concept, Ve'arim natashta, and the cities that you left, meaning as you went out to war, you left those cities back there. Avdu zichram hema. The memory of those cities are now gone. Under the sands of time, there's nothing there. This is reminiscent of the Nevuah in Malachi. Tells us as follows in the first chapter. Ki tomar Edom, should Edom, remember that Edom is Esav. Yeah. We know that Esav, chazaka she Esav sone et Yaakov. There is a immutable fact that Esav hates Yaakov, and don't try to find the reasons. There don't have to be reasons for anti-Semitism. It's just a fact. It is Esau's grandson who is Amalek, right? Who will fall on the sword as long as he can kill a couple of Jews in the process. Ki tomar Edom. Should Edom dare say, Roshashnu, we've been impoverished. Everything's been taken away. We've been looted. V'nashu v'nivne charavot, but we'll go back and rebuild those ruins. Ko amar Hashem tzvakot, so says Hashem, and we use the word tzvakot, meaning armies, like the hosts of armies, when we refer to Hashem as vengeful. Hey, mayivnu v'ani ahos. They will build, and I will destroy. They'll try to rebuild, and God Himself will destroy what they try to rebuild. And as a result, now we have a bit of a problem here, and that is the word hema. You stick the pronoun at the very end of the sentence. Now, I want to read it to you the way it actually appears, and I wonder what your translations do with this. Tamu haravot lanetzach. The ruins are ended forever. Ve'arim natashta. And the cities that you have left, avad zicham, the memory of them has been lost, eradicated. What is the word hema doing at the end? They. Who's the they? The they shouldn't be there. Somebody read me a translation in English of that verse.
Oh, enemy, the waste places will have come to an end forever, and as for the cities which you have destroyed, their very memorial was lost even before.
They simply ignore the word.
Yeah.
Don't you see? The word hema is not merely the city. It's not merely the ruins. Who is the they that you stick at the end? It's the people in it. They too are gone. So it's almost as if it says, the ruins are lost forever. The cities that you laid waste, their memory is forgotten. And so are they. And so are they. Nothing left of them. Ve'Hashem le'olam yeshev. For that God will remain sitting on his throne forever. The fact that there was this oath, Yad al Kefka, God puts a hand on his throne as if raised an oath that he will not rest until evil is eradicated. Konen la mishpat kiso. He has established his throne to be there for judgment. It is the throne of judgment. And what will he do? Vehu yishpot tevel betzedek. And he will judge the entire world. But how? With tzedek. Not merely by the letter of the law, but tempered with mercy and compassion. And the question is, what for? A moment ago we saw him, if you like, a very vengeful God, right? Rashi tells us that there will be a differentiation. He judges those that are evil, but he saves those that are oppressed. When he sits in judgment, he recognizes the difference between the masterminds and those that have a gun held to their head to do the will of the masterminds. You can't judge the two of them the same way. And therefore, he says, "Hu yishpot tevel betzedek, yadin leumim b'meisharim," and he will bring to justice leumim, various nations, but to do so with meisharim, using both the law and mercy. Mayashar is straight. Now, the reason why would we do it straight? If this is the law and this is mercy, if you balance them both, then the scales are straight. You see, that would be my perspective on it. Vayi Hashem, and in the process of bringing this people to judgment, Vayi Hashem Misgav Ladach. The Ribbono Shel'Olam will become a support for those that were oppressed. Misgav is a uplifting of those that are down, of those people that were tortured, of those people that were the victims. I want you to think about this. If you took something like North Korea, you recognize also that there's hundreds of thousands in concentration camps there. for those who dare to even a whiff of resistance, you understand? So if you were to wipe out North Korea, you would be also wiping out perhaps a lot of innocent lives. But the Ribbono Shel, when he does judgment, goes against the evil, but at the same time he lifts up those that were put down. So the word dach is another word for, we have a lot of words for poor. Ani, Hevyon. Dach is from the word daka. Somebody meduke, somebody who is, dikaon is depression, oppression, somebody who's pressed down. And what do you do with him? We lift him up. Le'itot betzara, in times of trouble. The Ribbono Shel Olam goes on and raises those. And then we have a little interesting play here. Vayiftechu becha yodei shemecha, and those who know your name, yudke vavke, one that was, that one that is, that one that always be, the one from which all existence emanates, and the one at the same time who exhibits a tremendous unconditional love for those that he created. Those that know your name, those that understand it, those that love that name, they will continue trusting in you until that day. Ki lo azafta dorshecha, Hashem. For you never abandoned, you never left those that seek you, those that want your name, those that want and understand it, those that want God's closeness. If on the one hand it sounded like it was celebrating something that happened, and immediately it turned not into a celebration of something that happened, but rather a request for the ultimate judgment that ultimately would be. Zamru la Hashem Yoshev Tzion. Hagidu ba'amim alilotav. Who is Yoshev Tzion? Look inside. Tell me what you think. You would assume that it may be sing to Hashem those that dwell in Tzion. But if it was Zamru, it would be plural. And it should therefore say Yoshvei Tzion. If it's just one person, Zamer, you understand? Mm-hmm. You know who Yoshev Tzion is? It's Hashem. Hashem dwells in Tzion because he said, built me a place there. So Tzion is actually the name for the place where the Ribbono Shel Olam said that he would bring his Shechina. So it's a modifier of Yudkei Vavkei. Sing to Hashem who dwells in Zion. Hagidu ba'amim alilotav. But don't keep it only there. Tell throughout all of the nations the great things he's done. The great schemes that he's had. Ki doresh damim otam zachar. Because God is the one that seeks the bloods of those that are destroyed. What do we say about somebody who's been killed because he's a Jew? Hashem yikom damo. God will avenge his blood. God seeks the bloods. You will remember that after the first murder, when Cain killed Hevel, Dmei achicha tzoakim elai min ha'adama. Your brother's bloods cry out to me from the earth. And it's in plural. Says Rashi, you didn't just kill that person, you killed all the children that he might have had. Others say that it's because of the number of stab wounds, and it was as if that's the multiplicity of blood. So it turns out that the blood is screaming from the earth and demands vengeance. God, therefore, seeks. Now watch the interesting thing. A moment ago we said, you did not abandon those that seek Hashem. Seek your name. We seek him. And what does he seek? He seeks, where are my kindlach? Where is that blood? I owe it something. I need to avenge that blood. Ki doresh damim otam zachar. For the one that seeks the bloods, he remembered them. We may not remember all of the martyrs. We may not remember the names of everyone who was killed. But the Ribbono Shel Olam remembers them very, very well. Lo shachach tzakat. And now watch this. We read the word anim. We read it with the eyes. We say anavim. He does not forget the screams of the anavim. An anav is somebody who's humble, who's meek. It's written anim. We say anavim. Because these people became humbled, not because of their natural propensity, but because of what was done to them. Because everything that was taken away from them, their property, their children, their lives, you understand? It was taken so that they were left with nothing, and God remembers the cries. We may have forgotten, but He has not forgotten. And therefore comes now the cry of your author. Watch this. It's written and it's unique with three nunim. Chaneni. Typically what we do is one of them falls. And we have a dagesh in the nun. Here it's actually written with the three nuns. I won't try to speculate why. Chaneni Hashem. Chaneni is not merely have mercy, because it comes from the concept of, well, the Christians call it grace. Chen. But what really it means is matnat chinam. I may not deserve it, not on the basis of my merit, but just because you love me and because I love you. Just because. Chaneni Hashem. Look at me. Have mercy on me. Re'e oni misonai. Look at my oppression, my poverty, caused to me by my enemies. Do you remember a moment ago I told you that the word anaim is not because anavim. It's not because I'm this timid little thing. It's what they did to me that made me so weak, so meek, so, you know, so humble, so humiliated. Humble implies something that is a refined character. That's very different from being humiliated, in which somebody has done something to you. Meromemi, the one that lift me up, misharei mavet, from the gates of death. This is the cry of whom? A moment ago he says he seeks out the blood. He does not forget those who cried out to him. What do they cry out to him? What did they cry out to him? What do they continue to cry out to him? This is what the cry. This is the cry. Lift me up from the gates of death. Lift me up, leman asapra, so that I can tell kol tehilotecha, all of your praises, b'sharei batzion, in the gates of the daughter of Tzion. You will remember that we call countries mother, cities daughters, right? Il ve'em b'Yisrael, and the suburbs around it treated as daughters. Instead of the gates of death, we are now in the gates of the daughter of Tzion. If Tzion is Mount Moriah, where the Beit HaMikdash is, then Bat Zion is the city around it, in the gates of Yerushalayim. Take me out of the gates of death and bring me up to the gates of Yerushalayim. Agila b'Yeshuatecha. And again, another word for happiness, for rejoicing. But this particular word is different from the others. We have a lot of words for happiness. Sason, Simcha, Alizut, Alsa, and Gila is a joy that comes from Eureka, from revelation. I will rejoice in this sudden discovery of what? Of your salvation. Knowing that my cry has not been falling on deaf ears, somebody heard me, and what will I then see? Not enough. What is the Yeshua that we want to see? The revelation that we want to see? Tav'u goyim bashachat asu. the nations that persecuted and tortured us will drown in their own shachat. Leshachat is to destroy, it's to rot. The word shachat itself can mean spillage. They will destroy in the ruins, in the destruction that they themselves will create. Bereshet zu tamnu nilkeda raglam. In the net, in the trap that they themselves set, their foot will be trapped in it. That's why I told you that Radaku takes this as Goliath. You know, that Goliath was killed by his own sword. But if I treat this in a more universal fashion, as Rashi chooses to do, it would mean that any weapons that we had that were aimed at us will end up coming back as a boomerang against those that wanted to send them. So if we can see Iran blowing up in its own nuclear plans, that would be pretty nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. If you can imagine a car carrying bombs that wanted to come and create some sort of havoc in Israel, blowing up those that want to bring it up and not ever reach us at all. And as a result, it will become known that God has done his judgment. Before al kapav nokesh rasha. The evil were trapped by God's own work or by his own doing. The evil have been trapped by their own doing. Higayon sela. Higayon. Lehagot is to think. Lehagot is to express. To bring your thoughts into a full conceptual order so that you can actually express it in words. Suddenly the line ends with, think on it forever. Think on it. Think about it. Think about the fact that all the evil that has been planned has actually gone to destroy the very ones that planned it. Yashuvu Rishaim L'Sheol. And now we have a problem for the logic of it. Yashuvu Rishaim, may the evil ones go back L'Sheol. Sheol is the grave or it's hell. Did they come from hell? That they're going back to hell? If you treat these people as if they were demons, you understand, otherworldly creatures, you could say that. How would you then say? Says Rashi, we have the word le sheol. There is a rule in Hebrew, in biblical grammar, as follows. If I want to say to Mitzrayim, I either say le Mitzrayim or I say Mitzrayimah. The hey at the end is instead of the lamed. I can say Yisraela or I can say le Yisrael. If I put both the lamed and the hey to the word Sheol, I've got a double one. Says Rashi, it's in the lowest level of hell. They'll be in hell, but now they're going to go back to a lower level in hell. If that's the case, they're going down. So you're thinking about Sheva Medore Gehenom, the seven levels of hell, and you can go to, read Dante, if you Dante, like, or yeah. If it, there Dante you go. Yeah. Ibn Ezra wants to recognize that the word Sheol, we don't really have the concept of hell. We have the concept of Sheol. And Sheol is nothing more than the earth, the grave, the rot. Which means, as Kohelet told us, that the body goes back to the earth from whence it came, and the spirit goes up back to God. And that's what survives. But if you no longer have a soul, then there's nothing that goes up, and all you are left is a rotted body in the ground. Says Ibn Ezra, of course it's going back, because from where was God, from where was man made? He was made from the earth. Therefore, they're going back to the earth from which they came. But why then would we put the double lamed and the hay? Because they're going deep entrailed, as they say in Yiddish, tief entrailed. You're not just going into the ground, you ain't never going up again. There's no trias hamesim for them. They will never rise up again. And what does he then go call them? Kol goyim shechei Elohim. All those goyim that are forgotten by God, forgot God. I believe this is the source for the term used, God forsaken. A moment ago it says God did not forget the Anavim. But in a sense, he's forgotten them, meaning that he no longer remembers them. They are God forsaken. They're given up. To others, it means those that forgot that there is a God. Those that are going to hell completely are those that said, "Where is your God now?" as they led us to the gas chambers. Those that thought that there's no accountability. And the word here is not Yudke Vavke. It is Dafka, the word Elohim or Elohim, because it can be both Kodesh and Chol. If they believed that there was any kind of higher power or powers, we would stand a chance. But if they are complete atheists, believing that there is any accountability higher on, they believe that they can do what they can do and not ever be held accountable. Those are the ones that will return to the grave as beasts and nothing more. Ki lo lanetzach ishkach evyon. For the Ribbono Shel Olam will not forget the poor forever. It looks like he's forgotten. There were times when it looked like God had forgotten us. But he will not forget forever. Tikvat anavim toved la'ad. And the word lo is the first part. Ki lo lanetzach yishkach evyon, and not forever will the hope of the humbled, the hope of the poor, be lost forever. In other words, those that have lost hope, it won't be lost forever. It will look like for a while like God forgot us. It won't be that way forever. But there is an implication that there will be a time when it looks like both had happened. Kuma Hashem. Now this is a person who's living in an era when it looks like maybe God had forgotten him. Therefore he says, rise up Hashem. Right? Not unlike Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, Kuma Hashem v'yafutzu oyvecha. Come up, rise up, God, so all of your enemies will disperse. Al ya'oz enosh. Don't let brazen mortal. Enosh is another word for humans, but it comes from the word anush, which means mortal, somebody who can die. Somebody who does not last forever. Don't stand by allowing mere mortal to think that they can get away with us. Yishaftu goyim, may nations be judged al panecha. Al panecha, according to some meaning, in front of your face, in front of you. But al panecha can also mean with your fury, in your face, in a sense. Let them see your face. Show them that there is a God after all. Please, God, put your... And now comes that word, morah. To some, the word morah is no more than the same thing as with an aleph. Put your fear in them. But it's not written with an aleph, is it? And therefore, that's what the Radak's position in Sfornos and Ibn Ezra's. Rashi suggests that it comes from the word marut, which means your dominion. Put your yoke on them. Show them who's boss. He also suggests, Rashi, that it comes from the verb lirot, to shoot. Direct your arrows, if you like, at them. Because there is a verse in the Torah that says, lo yale moral roshcha, you should not put a blade forbidding men to shave, right? It can mean a blade. Put the blade to them. And to Rashi, it's not one or the other. It's almost as if this is a not a double, but a triple entendre. Shoot them. Put the yoke on them. put the blade to them. Yed'u goyim enosh hema. Let the nation know that they are merely mortal. Mm-hmm.